Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melanie C. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling from Wilsonville, Oregon. Today is Wednesday, February 6, 2019. And today we are reading from the Big Book. We are on page 6 in the chapter Bill's Story. Going to unpack paragraph 2 today, and it begins with the mind and body are marvelous mechanisms and ends with 40 pounds underweight. Today's readers are the 12 steps, Marissa E., the 12 traditions, CJ H. Reading the text today in support, Liz T., Liat TD, and Robin P. The share ID number for yesterday's 10 a.m. meeting is 12503. 12503. And the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting's share ID number, that would be for today, Wednesday, February 6th, 12506, 12,506. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Marissa E. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, my fellows. This is Marissa E., recovered compulsive overeater outside Los Angeles. The 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Marissa E. I will now ask CJH to read the 12 traditions of OA.
Thanks, Melanie. Hi, everyone. Gratefully recovered compulsive eater, CJH. Our 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, CJH. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by same pass, then press star 1 to remute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted, and this would include exclusively pressing your star 1 as opposed to just muting your own phone. Thank you so much for that consideration. Today we resume our study of the Big Book in the chapter Bill's Story. We're on page 6, and we are focusing our discussion on paragraph 2, which begins with the mind and body are marvelous mechanisms and ends with 40 pounds underweight. And Liz T. is going to read that paragraph and unpack it for us today with her experience on that subject. Hey, Liz, good morning. Thanks.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Melanie. Thanks so much for your service. My name is Liz T., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minnesota. Thank you, God, for the gift of entire abstinence and the 12 steps of recovery. The mind and body are marvelous mechanisms, for mine endured this agony 2 more years. Sometimes I stole from my wife's slender purse when the morning terror and madness were on me. Again, I swayed dizzily before an open window or the medicine cabinet where there was poison, cursing myself for a weakling. There were flights from city to country and back as my wife and I sought escape. Then came the night when the physical and mental torture was so hellish, I feared that I would burst through my window, sash and all. Somehow I managed to drag my mattress to a lower floor, lest I suddenly leap. A doctor came with the heavy sedative. Next day found me drinking both gin and sedative. This combination soon landed me on the rocks. People feared for my sanity. So did I. I could eat little or nothing when drinking, and I was 40 pounds underweight. Again, my name is Liz T., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minnesota. And what came to mind for me this morning when I heard this read at the earlier meeting this morning is what I put my body through and my mind through being in active food addiction. Some vivid memories of mine are trying to beat this game on my own. One of my last tactics before I ran out of ideas to try to control this disease was the Pay and Weigh program I had gone back to after my third baby was not working. I was actually gaining weight in a particular Pay and Weigh program, and so it was affecting my finances too. Talk about demoralizing, going to a group and being weighed and, you know, eating their food and it not working. here I was triggering the allergy the entire time because the food that they sell has my alcoholic ingredients in it, and I didn't know it until I got in these rooms with you guys, and you taught me about the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And I went through doctor's opinion with a sponsor that we went through the steps very thoroughly. She walked me through and guided me through, and we made a list of my alcoholic foods, ingredients, and behaviors, and got them in black and white. And now I know if I deviate from that, I am no longer following my abstinence. I'm eating off of my food plan. So my abstinence today is very black and white. And I'm so grateful for that because I struggled for so long trying to do it, you know, out there in society when I needed the 12 steps for a spiritual malady. I was trying to fix the spiritual malady with physical solutions. And another thing that came to mind was what my body went through. My poor feet. I had plantar fasciitis. I was 250 pounds trying to do a Zumba class. Killing my feet. I went through 3 different pairs of tennis shoes. Again, spending money, you know, if money, there was no limit, you know, to try to fix this. Going through different pairs of tennis shoes thinking it's the shoes. Well, I'm bouncing around on, you know, my poor little feet with a large body. No wonder my feet were killing. So that was no longer working. I was just running out of ideas on how to fight this thing on my own. I was out of ideas, and that's where I have to be. Desperate, bloody, hopeless. I had to be able to ask for help. I'm so grateful I got into these rooms with you guys. I mean, trying to seek escape. I mean, I've tried all those things too. You know, maybe if I moved, maybe if I didn't have this job, maybe if my kids would listen, maybe if my husband got home from work on time. I mean, all these things outside of me, if I could try to fix it and change it, then my life would be okay. I mean, that's my dishonesty today when I do my inventories. It usually comes down to if things were different, if I could change it, then life would be better. Life would be easier. It's usually where my dishonesty falls. And then the mental torture, the waking up in the candy wrappers all over the place, you know, hiding Twizzlers from my kids so that if my baby cries and I don't know how to deal with her, I can go grab my stash and that'll get me through. I mean, the mental and physical torture, the allergy of the body triggering that over and over and over and not realizing it wasn't until somebody opened this big book, cracked this open, took me through the doctor's opinion that it could finally click with me. And today I get to do that with the still suffering and pass that information on and hope and pray that something clicks for them, that they realize, oh my gosh, I've been in this vicious cycle. I've got to find a way out of this. I can't do this on my own. I'm a prisoner. I'm a prisoner to this vicious cycle.
Time.
Without the 12 steps. With that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz T. Liz T just commented on paragraph 2, page 6 of the big book in Bill's story, and it starts with the mind and body are marvelous mechanism. We're unpacking that second paragraph alone today, and there's an invitation for folks to comment on that. Who would like to share?
Carrie F., Kathleen O.,
Carrie and Kathleen. Did you say Renee?
Yes.
And Leslie?
Renee W.
Gotcha, Renee. Thanks.
CJH?
CJH?
Paula N.
I gotcha, Paula. That's it. That's a good lineup. Thanks so much, Paula N. So I have Carrie S., Kathleen O., Renee W., Leslie W., CJH, and Paula N. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning, Mel. This is Carrie S., gratefully recovered in Golden, Colorado, and thank God living in the sunlight of the spirit today. There were flights from city to country and back as my wife and I sought escape. And so Bill here is teaching me about geographical cures and how if he moved and he flew from one place to another, he would leave behind all of his problems. For me, it was Boston to Boulder to Santa Barbara to San Diego, and thank God I ended up back here in Colorado where I finally dug into this program, Overeaters Anonymous, and was shown this phone meeting, A Vision for You, and I began to understand the mind and the body, the twofold nature of my illness, and today I am so grateful for the simple guidelines that are found in this big book, this little chip of a book, because no longer am I living in that insanity, that vicious cycle of going back to the food, thinking that I can have a little bit of my alcoholic food triggering the mental obsession coupled with the physical allergy. And today, thank God, I'm digging my heels in. I'm not trying to move from place to place to place, trying to escape disaster. Today, I am trying to walk through the fire of the emotions of being a recovered woman and feeling my feelings. Thank God for the steps. And with that, I just wanted to say thank you so much to A Vision for You, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Harry S. Kathleen, you're going to be next, and then Renee will come up after you.
Good morning, Melanie, and hello, everyone on the line. Welcome to any newcomers on the line. So grateful to be here. This is Kathleen O., recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. So for mine, endured this agony for 2 more years. And for me, the agony of binging and then telling myself I'd do better tomorrow. But today I binge on every type of flour, sugar, fat combination that I could get my hands on. And, you know, today I'd get it out of my system because tomorrow I was going to start diet number 957 or whatever it was. I'd do it tomorrow. I was going to get control tomorrow. And this agony, you know, waking up the next morning with dread and remorse, you know, determined I wasn't going to repeat the behavior. And if I was lucky, I'd last maybe 20 minutes before the obsession of the mind gave me no option but to eat once again. You know, there was always tomorrow. I was the master of delusion and denial in this horrific disease. And, you know, Bill talks about how he stole from his wife's purse. As a child, I stole money off the dresser of my parents, stole money out of my mom's purse. And, you know, I was pretty young, but I had access to, it was the days when kids could wander around a lot. And, you know, I had access to this little corner store where I could go stock up on candy. And, you know, we also had these little trucks driving around the neighborhood where you just go outside and get it from the truck. And, you know, Bill talks about there were flights from city to country and back. It's like, oh, yes, the geographical cure. I always thought if I moved to another place, life would be better and I'd stop the insanity of being controlled by the food. But unfortunately, no matter where I went, I took me with me. So, you know, Bill talks about I could eat little or nothing when drinking and I was 40 pounds underweight. Well, I could do nothing but eat too much and I was 70 pounds overweight. So this, you know, this vicious cycle was because, like Bill, my real problem was in my mind and it always gave me an option to pick up. And there is a solution. I am so happy that I am on the line with all of you who have either found the solution or are seeking the solution. But there is a solution to get some relief from this crazy mental obsession. And with that, I pass. Thank you, Melanie.
You're welcome. Thank you, Kathleen. No. Renee W., you're up. And then Leslie W. will follow you. If I can get my mouth to work. Renee W., are you there with us still?
Yes. Sorry, I lost you. Hi, I'm Renee W., a compulsive overeater. And what stands out in this reading for me is agony for 2 more years. I wish I could say 2 years, but it's been 30 plus for me. And I just know that when I reread this again and again, how important it is to remind myself that I have a disease. There's poison. There's certain poison foods that I can't ingest. It's just like alcohol to the alcoholic. And cursing myself for those 30 years of trying to do it the OA way, trying to do it on my own without going through the big book and really learning from the source that started this all. And I'm just so grateful I've been in and out of OA for those years. But when I found A Vision for You, it just feels like home. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Renee W. Leslie W., you're up. TJ will come after you.
Hey, thanks, Mel, for your service today. This is Leslie W., recovered in Tennessee. And, you know, I'll never forget the time when I went back home to visit my family 5 months after having my baby. On all of the weight plus some that I had gained during my pregnancy, we were supposed to go to an event that day. Only my clothes that I brought with me wouldn't fit. And I had a temper tantrum right there and then and burst into tears, just lamenting over my fat body. I mean, I came into OA 3 months after my first child was born, and I didn't know what was happening to me. I didn't want to acknowledge that I could be a compulsive overeater. I kept fighting it, kept eating, kept thinking that I could moderate, kept thinking I didn't have to do the work that other people were having to do. I wore my maternity clothes for at least 2 years after my child was born. I mean, it was an endless blur of expandable waistbands and lots of black and avoiding mirrors and avoiding people, avoiding places, eating through the night. Eating through the night will take sleep deprivation to a whole new level. Other people said, you know, don't be so hard on yourself. You just had a baby. Give it time. Well, that was the perfect excuse to eat. I was in a brand new beautiful house with a brand new beautiful baby, and all I wanted to do was drown myself in my brand new beautiful bathtub. I convinced myself that my family would be better off without a weakling as a mother and a wife. And if it weren't for God's truth breaking in during a brief moment of clarity at that time, his gift of giving me a fellowship to belong to, my child might be motherless, my husband might be wifeless, I don't know. And I might not have drowned myself in that bathtub that day, but without God's intervention and the truth that my fellows have shared with me from this book, I would have gone on living a life of misery, a shell of a woman, stuffed with massive amounts of food, present in bodily form, but not present in my mind, not living life, just barely getting by, living from binge to binge instead of moment to moment. Death would have been a welcome relief as opposed to a lifelong life lived of suffering and self-inflicted abuse. But you know what? God saved me from both of those, and I must never forget that, and that's why I'm on this line today. Thanks, Melanie, without a pass.
Thank you, Leslie W. CJH, you're up. Paula will follow you. Hi, CJ.
Hi, Melanie. Thanks so much. Oh, yeah, this is just such great stuff, and I just want to welcome anybody who's new on the line. Welcome home. You know, we never have to feel this way again, and this is Bill really talking about his bottom. And when I've been blessed to have some really wonderful sponsors and who've taken me through this big book, and I don't think I can ever go through it enough, I'm always just reminded, and it's good to come back today and look at this and see where was I. And I was asked by previous sponsors in my time in OA and AA to come back and ask myself as I'm reading this, have I felt like this? Did I react like this? And as I get honest, I say absolutely. I stole from my family's bank accounts, especially when the madness and terror were on me. You know, where's the food? I got to have the food. I would stand before my open refrigerator or my junk food cabinet and just craving those alcoholic foods, but cursing myself a weakling. Why am I here again? Why am I here again? Not able to understand, you know. And definitely flights from city to country and back again, seeking escape. I mean, I would go to my parents and go visit this person and, you know, spend my days full of all these activities and craziness and get myself overwhelmed. And I just drove myself, just, I was in a hellish mental torture. There's no doubt. And then that would bring me to the physical torture of being so stuffed and so sick and telling myself, I'm never going to do this again when I would wake up in the morning. And it was like this, you know, and if you'd given me a lie detector test in the morning, I would have said, absolutely, I'm not doing this again today. I'm not. But, you know, again, I would get up and do the same thing all over again. You know, and I felt like I was coming out of my skin. And I would drag myself from doctor to diet clubs to, you know, this group and that group and this church and this thing and that thing, and nothing helped. You know, I just suffered so. And I know it is truly by the hand of OA being there and people extending, and truly by a power greater than me, walked me into the rooms and walked me into this recovery, and has ever since I've been in, walked me, you know, one day at a time, hand in hand with God and with a fellow, and helping somebody else, and being willing to say what my truth is and how I'm struggling, and hearing another person say it, that we together, you know, could do what we could never do alone, and together we can see. We can see the power of this great God as I'm hearing this morning. I just am in awe of the fact that we're sitting here not eating. This is amazing. I don't know how many people on the line, but how many of us are sitting here not eating? This is a miracle. And I was 150 pounds overweight. I was hopeless. I was hopeless. And the good thing is we're hearing that today, and I get reminded of that today. And that just makes me more grateful today to be willing to share this with somebody else. So if you are out there and you don't know and you're not sure and you're wondering what we're even really talking about, just hang in there. You know, pick up the phone. Tell us you're new. We're here and we want to help. And I know I want to help. And I know I've been helped. And it's the beauty of just one compulsive eater talking to another from our heart, full of depth and weight and compassion and love. And it is truly the language of the heart today. Yeah. I'm grateful, so grateful to be speaking it. Thanks for your service, Melanie. Everybody have a great day.
Thanks, CJ. That's CJH. Before we invite Paula N. on the line to share her experience, strength, and hope, I wanted to tell everyone that we are in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, reading in Bill's story on page 6, and we're unpacking paragraph 2 today, that single paragraph, paragraph number 2, the mind and body are marvelous mechanisms, so that you can get ready. After Paula, I'm going to open up the lines for additional 6 to share and comment on that paragraph. It is now your turn. Paula N., good morning to you.
Thank you for letting me speak. I'm Paula N. from Tennessee. I started going to OA a few years back, like going to physical meetings, and I just could not connect with what was going on. I didn't understand it. I was looking for something I couldn't find. There was a lot going on in my life, and I couldn't find my fit there. I have been coming to this meeting and actually recommending other people to join this meeting or to listen to it. And I'm just, I'm underlined the line that says, cursing myself for a weakling, because that is just what I grew up with hearing about addiction, that it's, you're just weak. And I had started in another program several years ago, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but it was AA, and I really didn't have a huge drinking problem. I just always carried an addiction with me, and food has always been my bigger addiction. So stopping drinking, that was no big deal to me. So I just went back to overeating, and I heard people talking about that it was an addiction, but I didn't, an illness, but I did not understand it because I had it so in my mind that it was a weakness. I didn't have any backbone, all the things that I'd heard said to the alcoholics in my family, while completely nobody's mentioning the food addicts in my family. And so I'm really trying to understand this allergy. And through these meetings, I'm hearing how food is my drug. And I know that. I've known that for a long time. But this week, I called for my drug at night because I was so overwhelmed. And what I walked away from that is that I cannot get to that place of overwhelmness, that I have to protect my serenity. So this is a wonderful meeting and going through this book and learning these things. Sometimes I'm mad about it. I don't want to accept it, but I am excited to start to understand it. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Paula N. The lines are now open for folks to comment on paragraph 2, page 6 of the big book.
Sarit L.
Sarit, hi. Jordan L.
Mm-hmm. Mags C.
Hi, Mags.
Patty H.
Robin D.
Somebody H. Somebody H.
Denise H.
Gotcha, Denise. And then Robin
Dad.
What? I didn't get just Robin who?
Robin DZ from South Carolina.
DZ. And one more.
Jean J.
Des M.
Jean J. That's great. Okay, Des, we'll see what happens with our lineup after this, and I'll grab you then. That's Des M. Okay, so I have Sarit L., Jordan L., Mags C., Denise H., Robin DZ, Jean L., and possibly Des M. Good morning, Sarit.
Good morning, Melanie. It's Sarit L. from Montreal. Oh, this paragraph really speaks to me, and I wanted to share my experience around this. The mind and body are marvelous mechanisms. For mine, endured this agony 2 more years, and it's an agony that only an addict knows about, and especially in regards to food. And only an addict knows of the pain that the food produces. Because a normal eater, when they eat or ingest whatever binge foods are for me, be it cakes, cookies, chocolates, ice cream, that doesn't produce any effect for the normal eater. And yet for me, as a compulsive overeater and a food addict, it's an agony, and I endure this agony way more than 2 more years, way more, because food is so cunning and baffling and powerful and unassuming and normal, and it can even be healthy, and it can even be organic, and it may not be sugar, it may be maple syrup. It doesn't matter for me. It's so unassuming and so cunning, and it can hide under the guise of so many things that it was more than 2 more years. It is more than 2 more years. I've been in these rooms for 11, 12, and it's such a subtle disease that it took longer for me to reach my bottom, much longer than 2 more years, and swaying dizzily before an open window. Only another addict can understand that the intense mental and emotional torture that this causes when we wake up in the morning after a binge. The nights I couldn't sleep and just beating ourselves up for being a weakling. And lest I suddenly leap, I locked myself in my bedroom with my newborn baby, my kids. I didn't want to leave the bedroom in the morning. I was so scared I was going to binge today. And I was 40 pounds underweight. I love that sentence because it shows me that as anyone who uses a substance, it typically has an effect on the body, whether it's underweight or overweight. And for me, the food affected my weight in both ways. It was bulimia, and it was anorexia, and it was compulsive overeating. And so it really does manifest itself in the body. The other thing is that I just wanted to share it after I had my baby. Someone was sharing about the pregnancies. I laughed today because my highest weight was not during my pregnancy or in my 9th month of pregnancy. It was post-pregnancy, and it was months post my pregnancy. And people, of course, are telling you it's okay, you've just had a baby, it's fine. But I knew all that fat, all that weight gain was from my binging. It had nothing to do with the baby, and my baby fat was not leaving me. So whatever excuses, if it's pregnancy, if it's nursing, really this addiction can hide. It subtly can hide under so many guys, and thank God that I'm here and recovering with all of you today. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Sarit L. Jordan L., you're up. Mags will come in after you.
My name is Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Snowy, Colorado this morning. and I just wanted to share, so Bill's story, I remember coming in this time around, and this was after a relapse. This was after I had gotten entirely abstinent for the first time ever. And I came in, there was a lady that I was talking to at the time and who was sponsoring me, and I remember her asking me to sort of like tell her more about my story, right? And I didn't really understand what she was talking about at the time or the importance of what she was talking about. I mean, I was very foggy. Like the someone mentioned before, the food, it takes a toll on your body. So my brain was very foggy. It took me a while. It took me like I can relate to Bill's story very specifically now, but it took me a while to be able to do that. And like lots of studying and reading through it with Joe and Charlie and with Kim and with some other compulsive overeaters, with some other special editions over and over again. But eventually I got to a point where I could relate very well. And I'm sorry, I missed yesterday's meeting and couldn't be on the line. but I remember the morning after my relapse, or I shouldn't say the morning after my relapse. I remember waking up one morning during my relapse and feeling those things that Bill felt, the remorse, horror, and hopelessness. And then coming to today's paragraph, again, I remember distinctly taking trips and traveling around the country, and I had this new boyfriend, and we were going together, and we're trying to have this relationship, but I'm like in the middle of a relapse, yet I'm not really like willing to admit that I'm in a relapse because the mental fog had settled down and two boxes of this or that, and like I'm okay, you know, and I'm just sort of like managing my way through this, trying to pretend that like cereal isn't a relapse, or 100% pure maple syrup isn't a relapse, or unfiltered honey isn't a relapse, you know? And for me, I gained back 40 of the 80 or 90 pounds I had lost. So I was 40 pounds overweight again. but I can relate very specifically to this stuff, to Bill's story, even as a compulsive overeater. In truth, I'm an alcoholic as well, and I can actually relate my compulsive overeating to Bill even better. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. Thanks for letting me share, Mel.
Thank you. Thank you, Jordan L. Mags, you're up, and then Denise will follow you.
Good morning, everybody. This is Mags C. from Denver, Colorado. And isn't it interesting that you don't need drugs or alcohol to feel that crazy? It's just, to me, I thought, man, you just need, like, some kind of crazy, like, you know, brain-altering substance. And honestly, agony for me was sugar and flour. And I was cursing myself as a weakling every day, every single day, every minute, every hour. I would obsess about how many calories I was eating, how I would go have to burn it off. The morning terror and madness that Bill was feeling, these racing thoughts. I mean, I'm a survivor of incest and abandonment and from when I was a very small child. And so it's weird. Part of my personality is like an enforcer. If I did something I thought was bad, like, overeating for comfort, and then I would actually turn on myself and say, you don't get to eat. You don't get to have any comfort or joy today because you binged yesterday. And I endured this agony from the time I can remember, 9 years old, trying to commit suicide because of how crazy and how mad I felt, and just going to hash browns and putting them in the oven and eating the whole thing, even if they were still frozen, and just eating and eating and eating and trying to stuff my fear and my agony. And how do you even know that there is a different way of life for you until somehow with the miracle happens and you are enlightened? And all I knew about AA, you know, or the 12 steps, was the idea of God and religion, and I detested that. And so I needed to be so incredibly devastated in my life that I was about to lose everything. And I was ready to divorce my newlywed husband. I was writing myself for FinFin and being questioned by the pharmacist, who luckily was a friend, and I didn't lose my career. But I felt mad, crazy. I was suicidal, trying to slip my wrists. And I would still try to comfort with the food, and the enforcer would try to punish me. And I was literally crazy. And my spinal fusion that I had actually didn't heal, because I was eating one grilled cheese sandwich a day, and I had to repeat that 8-hour surgery. But the relief is, like, today I was able to get into a program because I was on the floor, on my knees, in tears, devastated. And today, because of these 12 steps, I have days upon days of calm, of peace. I can walk through some serious stressors in life, which are always coming up. But this is all from a program of action, which I can relate to. Let me do something. Please, for God's sakes, let me do something to get out of that. And then it's a spiritual, not religious program. So I didn't run away screaming. And no one ran out of the room or called the cops when they heard my fear, anger, and sex inventories. So I am so grateful, so very, very grateful for Bill. And that's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Mags C. Denise H., you're up. Press star 1, please. And then Robin DZ will come in after you. Denise, please press star 1.
Hi, this is Denise. Can you hear me?
Not very well. Is there anything that you can do to adjust the volume? Are you on speaker or something like that? Or?
Yeah. Is that better?
Not a good idea. Can you get off speaker? That would be more helpful to volume-wise and then the interference with the electronics here. But thank you.
All right. Let's see if I can... I'm sorry.
And that's just kind of a general thing to tell everyone. Speakerphones are
okay.
Just
is that any better?
Technology.
Can you hear me
much
now?
Better. Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. So this paragraph hit me really between the eyes. You know, it when it says then came the night when the physical and mental torture was so hellish, I feared I would burst through my window, dash and all. I've been working in this program pretty diligently for a while. When in 2003, my oldest child, who was at the time 31 years old, died of a heroin overdose. And I think my grief over that became so great, so hellish, that I got back into the food. Not immediately. It didn't happen immediately. But over time, I think my program eroded, and I began to pick up here and there different foods that I had previously avoided. And this clearly demonstrates the progressive nature of the disease in my mind. And when he says, people feared for my sanity, so did I. I think when I came to that point where I feared for my own sanity, that was just shocking and scary. You know, I thought, oh my God, I'm crazy. I'm fucking nuts. I really related to the drug addict at that point, as clearly as I ever have, in terms of just being unable to stop going to the refrigerator over and over and over and over and over again until I was just completely, you know, blacking out from whatever I was eating at the time. And so, you know, Bill's story is a powerful, powerful weapon in this program in terms of showing us how the progression of the disease overtakes us, and how when we gamble with the food, we lose. We always lose. And I was killing myself with food. Thank you, God, I was able to find a way to return to a right relationship with God and to ask God to help me in this process of recovery. And it's been a huge blessing in my life. Thank you very much for letting me share.
Thanks, Denise H. Robin DZ and then Jean L. Each has 2 minutes, and that would take us to the end. And my apologies, Des. Encourage you to come tomorrow and share at that particular time. So good morning, Robin DZ. You got your two here, and we'll share it with Jean.
Good morning, everybody. I think we've heard over and over again about Bill's pain. Some of it he brought on himself, and some of it was beyond his control. And like most addicts, the mind tries to get you to answer life's pain with pleasure. And, you know, he found pleasure in drink, and like him, I found pleasure in food. And I just wanted to say that, you know, he didn't want to commit suicide, but he was. In slow installments, he was committing suicide. And when I was in my teen years, somebody asked me, are you trying to kill yourself? And I said, no. But I realize now that even though I didn't want to commit suicide, I was one spoonful, one forkful, one bagful at a time. And the thing that I have come to learn through reading the Big Book is that my mind keeps dangling that bait out in front of me, and it keeps, you know, showing me, you know, this will make you feel better, or telling me this will make you feel better. And I have come to realize that, you know, underneath that bait is a hook, and I have got to stop taking the bait, because my pains in life are not solved by food. The real answer to life's pains is having a strong spiritual center, and that's what I'm working on. My higher power can handle any problem that I have, but that bait with the hook underneath can't do a thing for me. And with that, I pass.
Thank you very much, Robin DZ. Jean L., you have the last 2 minutes. Thanks for sharing. Jean L., star one, please. Looks like maybe Jean L. is not here. Des, did I lose you all together when I made that announcement? Would you like to have about a minute and a half?
Hi, this is Des M. Am I in time?
You betcha. Let's give you a minute and a half. Thanks so much. Glad that you're here.
All right. Let me catch my breath. Okay. This is a compulsive overeater from Southern California. So just in a minute, I'm super grateful to be able to share and to be able to relate to Bill. So what really hit me was dragging his mattress. And I can't think of one specific time, but I always never was able to be it just didn't come to me till it came to me, like, that I had a spiritual malady, you know. So I just tried time and time again to, like, drag a mattress and, like, catch myself at the other end. And, you know, through restricting or just, I don't know, Richard Simmons or any number of things to, you know, control and enjoy my eating. And, like, I didn't know what was wrong. And so I would just try to, like, pat it. And I didn't have a God. And just so grateful today to have a solution, to not have to be, like, perfect in my solution, and to share on the line. And I still am uncomfortable doing that, so I'm going to keep doing that so I can be a part of, because I'm really grateful for this program. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you very much. That's Des M. And that will conclude the sharing portion of our meeting today. So we're going to go into the wrap-up of the recorded portion. But stay with us. There's about 10 more minutes to come after we have said our serenity prayer. Thank you to everyone that shared today. The richness of this recording is just not wasted upon my heart. And we will now close this reading, this piece with our reading from the big book on page 164, and then we'll follow that with a serenity prayer. Liat TD, would you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, Melanie, thank you for the beautiful meeting. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose to you and us and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the men who are still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you tread the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you, and I'll pass.